Translation. When the Lord was engaged in his pastimes of the rasa dance in the forest of Vrindavan, enlivening the sexual desires of the wives of the inhabitants of Vrindavan by sweet and melodious songs, a demon of the name Shankachuda, a rich follower of the treasure of heaven, Kuvera, kidnapped the damsels, and the Lord severed his head from his trunk. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. We should carefully note that the statements described herein are the statements of Brahmaji to Narada, and he was speaking to Narada of events that would happen in the future during the advent of Lord Krishna. The pastimes of the Lord are known to the experts who are able to see past, present, and future. And Brahmaji, being one of them, foretold what would happen in the future. The killing of Shankachuda by the Lord is a more recent incident after the Rasalila and not exactly a simultaneous affair. In the previous verses, we have seen also that the Lord's engagement in the affairs of the forest fire were described along with his pastimes of punishing the Kaliya snake. And similarly, the pastimes of the rasa dance and the killing of Shankachuda are also described herein. The adjustment is that all these incidents would take place in the future after the time when it was being foretold by Brahmaji to Narada. The demon Shankachuda was killed by the Lord during his pastimes at Horika in the month of Falguna, and the same ceremony is still observed in India by the burning of the effigy of Shankachuda one day prior to the Lord's pastimes at Horika, generally known as Holi. Generally, the future appearance and activities of the Lord or his incarnations are foretold in the scriptures, and thus the pseudo-incarnations are unable to cheat persons who are in knowledge of the events as they are described in the authoritative scriptures. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Janan Jana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this is an interesting verse. First thing that I noted, interestingly, and not seems very, Srila Prabhupada didn't get into the possibilities that this verse could unlock. He went down to some very very fundamental points. There are devotees who would read this verse and they would really go off into the rasas. This is rasa lila. This is the pinnacle of rasa or relationship with Krishna, but Prabhupada didn't go there. The first point he mentioned here, which is interesting, and he's talking about, well, how did Brahma, talking about Brahma talking to Narada, talking about future event. This is the Bhagavatam. In one sense, it's spoken after the pastimes of Krishna, but it's recalling a conversation that happened before all these things happened. So Prabhupada brought our attention to that straight away. Note, we should carefully note that this is a previous conversation talking about future events. And he links that to, that's why they're kind of, two of these stories are kind of amalgamated, two separate incidents, and they're put into one verse. And I think particularly we can give some attention to this term, knowing past, present, and future, that Prabhupada refers to here. So you could say, well, how did Lord Brahma know what's going to come? And I think it's telling that, in one sense, Lord Brahma knew what was going to happen later on because it happened to him yesterday. Remember, this is a day of Brahma, and Krishna appears every day of Brahma. So I calculated that what I've heard is that Lord Brahma is about 50 years old. So this pastime happened about 18,000 times so far in the life of Brahma. So for him to say what's going to happen, well, I can say it's going to happen today or tomorrow because it happened yesterday and it happened the day before and it happened the day before. So this is what's been referred to here by knowing past, present, and future. So we can say that tomorrow someone's going to be sitting here in this place in front of a number of devotees and he's going to give a class. And the class is going to be the Bhagavatam. We know that because it happened yesterday and the day before and it happened the week before. So we can say with our knowledge that it's going to happen tomorrow. So this is what's being referred to. This is what's being described. So in one sense, it's kind of a practical application of knowing past, present, and future. And normally, some years ago, I gave a similar class on this type of consideration. And generally, where it described knowing past, present, and future, it is seen in a more practical way. For example, describe the demigods know past, present, and future because they can see the past, present, and future of so many living entities who are dying within their time. So, for example, a cow lives about 18 years on average. So in our lifetime of, say, 70 years, if we get there, 70, then we may see 3 generations of cows. We'll see their past, their present, and their future. So it's similar like that. So the demigods, they can see huge, vast periods of time, and they see so many things coming and going. So this is a kind of practical application. Now, when it comes to Krishna, knowing past, present, and future, is a different category. But when it's talking about us and our ability to perceive things, then this is how it can be described in a practical sense. So we have that ability. We can see what's happening later on because we saw it happening in the past and we're seeing it present now. We know that probably in a few more weeks' time it's going to get darker and the day's going to be very short. Why? Because we had experience of it in the past and we can say, well, the same thing's going to happen next year. That's what's been described here. So Lord Brahma is describing these past times that are to come because they've already happened so many times in the past. In fact, we hear that these pastimes are cyclical, they're going on somewhere. Lord Brahma knows this, he's already experienced it himself so many times, and therefore he can relay what's coming very confidently because he knows what's going to come this particular day. That's what's described here. Interesting, Prabhupada's used the term that this pastime of Shagatru is more recent. When someone says more recent, you think, well, it happened yesterday, or you know, we may think, well, how recent? Well, it was just shortly after the pastimes of the Rasa Leela. So that's what's been described here, you could say, in this first part of the paragraph. Prabhupada is giving a very practical application there. I wanted to go into the some of the words in the verse, if you don't mind. Krida means playing. And this is everything about Krishna is play. I was listening to something the other day, and someone was asking this farmer. He said, what do you do for work? He said, well, I'm a farmer. And they said, well, what do you do for recreation? He said, well, I'm a farmer. So for him, his farming was his work and his recreation. So this is Krishna. Everything he does is play. It's activity. It's something that he's enjoying doing. He enjoys creation. He enjoys everything. Everything about it is just, it's enjoyable. So this is what he's doing. He's engaged in pastimes and in the forest. And generally, the forests are quite interesting. There are lots of different things going on there. There's a variety of activities. And this is a very particular time. It's nocturnal, nishakara, rashmi goryam. It's a nighttime activity. The moon is shining. Yesterday, we were hearing about Australian outback, that when it's the dark moon night, he was describing you can't even see your hand in front of your face. So you can't have much fun at nighttime if it's completely pitch black. You need a bit of illumination. So if it's a full moon night, you get the benefits of being night, and at the same time you can see what's going on. You can see around you. So this time of the day, it kind of creates a certain mood of, well, I don't know, amorous adventure. This is what's been described. And that's what it creates. Krishna's there, it's this nighttime, and it's creating this kind of, well, it's the perfect setting. And then what happens? Well, he has a desire to dance with someone. Rasa Unmukha, he wants to dance. And if you want to dance, then what's the next thing? Well, he starts doing some, accompanied by Kala Padayata and Murchitena, sweet songs and melodious music. So if you want to dance, you have to sing, Yeni, you have to, there's something you're dancing to. And so here describes sweet songs, beautiful songs, where he produced these beautiful songs, and the music was beautiful. beautiful was there. So it kind of creates things. If you want to dance, you need songs and music. If you hear songs and music, you want to dance. They're kind of interrelated there. So what Krishna is doing is, he wants to dance, and if you want to dance, it means you want to dance with somebody. Now this is the nighttime. This isn't the domain of the cowherd boy. This isn't their rasa. They don't want to dance with Krishna in the dark moon night. That's not their bhava. They don't get the jive of that. They want to be with Krishna in the daytime and to play with him in a certain way. That's what they get their buzz of. Mother Yashoda doesn't want to go there at nighttime and dance with Krishna. That's not her relationship with Krishna either. But so who Krishna wants to dance with are those who actually want to go there and they're ready to dance. This is what he wants to dance with them. So he's calling for them in the most beautiful way. There's beautiful songs going and it's very enchanting. You can imagine Krishna is the most beautiful person in the universe, the most beautiful in creation. So we can imagine, or maybe we can't imagine, but we could try to imagine, well, how beautiful, what kind of beautiful songs would he sing? Any beautiful song that we can imagine that we hear in this world, how much more beautiful songs could Krishna manifest? Because he is the source of all these beautiful songs and all this beautiful music. So he can invoke any kind of song and any kind of music most beautifully to capture our minds. We experience this in a little way sometimes. Sometimes we're going by, maybe you're walking down the temple room, you know, it's not where you're going, and suddenly there's this beautiful kirtan going on. It's played very nicely, the singer's very artistic, the music, the players are all in sync. You find yourself drawn there, you want to go there, and you may find yourself wanting to dance also. So this is the kind of the connection. So here in the wings, Krishna has these dancers waiting for him. They love him. I want to just read something from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to give the quality of these devotees, because we're going to hear about Smara Rujan's sexual desires. But I want to put in the context, this is from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We know it is an extra devotion, Prabhupada translated it. And this is the verse from the first 4:1. When bhava becomes extremely condensed, it is called prema by the learned. It softens the heart completely and produces extreme possessiveness of the Lord in the experiencer. So the people that Krishna is appealing to by this beautiful, melodious, sweet songs are people of this characteristic. They're pure lovers of Krishna, and they feel like they possess him. They feel it's like their duty, it's their right to be with him. This is who he's going to call. And therefore, that's the kind of setting. And these ladies of the villages, they're thinking of Krishna all the time. They're in disguise by their devotion, because they're chaste, beautiful mothers and wives and parts of the village. They're so chaste. They won't do anything to create any kind of scandal. But at the same time, when Krishna sends out this beautiful calling card, a beautiful melodious music, they can't stop themselves. Their love for him somehow the bubbles over and forces them to go to that place. So I'm going to read a few verses from this pastime that's been described here. And this is from, again, the 10th canto. Now, you're never going to study the 10th canto at Bhaktivedanta Manor. And I can say that as knowing past, present, and future. Because we went back at least three times in my sojourn here. And right, recently we got to the 10th canto, was it 13th chapter, and we decided, or they decided, or someone decided, you decided, Govinda decided, and the main reason is because Prabhupada's purports are here. Whereas once you get on beyond that, you haven't got Prabhupada's purports, so the decision is, let's go back. Whereas if you were at Soul Street, you'd have kept going. Anyway, so if you wanted to hear these pastimes in a Bhagavatam class, you might want to refer to their classes at Soho Street and maybe other temples too. Anyway, so that's why you make. So if you want to hear his pastime, you either read the Srimad Bhagavatam or you can read Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, where it's all beautifully intertwined with the philosophy and the pastimes. So I'm going to read a few verses from the Bhagavatam that this is referring to. This is from the 10th canto, chapter 29. Just bear in mind, sometimes if you try to correlate the Krishna stories and the Bhagavatam, sometimes there's a chapter difference, just to bear that in mind. Sri Krishna is, Sri Badaranayan said, Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in all opulences. Yet, among seeing those autumn nights, scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, he turned his mind towards loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potency. The moon then rose, anointing the face of the western horizon with the reddish hue of his comforting rays, and thus dispelling the pain of all who watched him rise. The moon was like a beloved husband who returns after a long absence and adorns the face of his beloved wife with red kumkum. Lord Krishna saw the unbroken disc of the full moon glowing with the red effulgence of newly applied vermilion, as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune. He also saw the Kumuda lotuses opening in response to the moon's presence, and the forest gently illumined by its rays. Thus the Lord began to play sweetly on his flute, attracting the minds of the beautiful-eyed gopis. Interesting, here's a flute. In the verse we're reading, he's talking about melodious songs, or Prabhupada translated melodious songs. Now you can imagine, we have this four flutes that Krishna has? But why is Krishna limited to only the sound of a flute? I'm sure he could play anything he wants from a flute. He can sound whatever he wants. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that the earrings swung back and forth. Some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. I'll do one more. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands, but they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed off to Krishna. This is the chapter 29. There's like four chapters that talk about Rasalila, so you're encouraged to read this in your own time. That's setting the scene. That basically they give everything. They're all doing different things. Suddenly the calling card was there. Krishna wants them, and they want to go and they want to serve Krishna. He wants to dance. They're going to go and dance with Krishna because that's what he wants. They love him so much. Whatever he wants, that's what they're going to do. They're not going for themselves. Well, they're going to get the residual reward of serving Krishna. But they want to serve Krishna, and that's how he wants them to serve him. And therefore, there's nothing going to stop them. They're going to go. So sometimes, again, we may reflect. We can enter that space. Sometimes we may have a duty, and we hear something beautiful, someone saying something. Why don't you just stop what you're doing for a moment, and you find yourself absorbed in it. Sometimes we may go too far. We may get chastised that we didn't do our duty. We joined the kirtan, something like that. We may experience that in a little way. So this is what's been described here. So that's that pastime. And the next pastime is of Sankachuda. So, and it's interesting here that the word Hartu means, like we said, Hari takes away. So Hartu is the kidnappers. And Harishati is will vanquish, like Hari takes away. So you kidnap Danuda Anugasya, the follower rich, like we have Go Dan, one who gives for the cows. So Dana means wealth. So one who's the follower of who has the wealth, Kuvera, he kidnapped, he stole the gopis, and therefore his life was stolen. That's kind of the connection there. He's a kidnapper, he stole the gopis, and his life is stolen. He'll be vanquished, he's taken out, and his head was cut off. So these two pastimes have been connected. Now the third line, it kind of links the two. Both that third line, which basically means that which is the wakened sexual desires of the inhabitants of Rajabhumi of the wives. So that kind of links the two. They're both kind of combined at that segment. So I'm going to read this story of Shankarachuda. Just a few points. Once Lord Govinda and Lord Ram, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Raja. So this is Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. The two lords prayed the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of stars, a lotus-scented breeze, and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire musical scale simultaneously. Their singing created happiness for the minds and ears of all living entities, all living beings. The gopis became stunned when they heard that song. Forgetting themselves, O king, they did not notice that their fine garments were becoming loose and their hair and garlands disheveled. While Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram thus playing according to their own sweet will and sang to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Kaveri named Shankarachuda came upon the scene. O king, even as the two lords looked on, Shankarachuda brazenly began driving the women off toward the north. The women who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords began to cry out to them. Hearing their devotees crying out, Krishna, Rama! And seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. The lords called out, replied, Do not fear. Then they picked up stones and quickly pursued that lowest of Guyakas, who swiftly ran away. Anyway, then they killed him. So these are the two stories that have been intertwined here. And so I think I was kind of wondering, well, what's the connection between these stories? I suppose one connection is that the gopis, there are for Krishna's pleasure. We're all for Krishna's pleasure. And if you try to steal what is Krishna, then you're not going to be a good outcome. That's good. You could say one lesson from this story here. I just want to kind of digress slightly because there's a verse here. One of the verses was about the gopis leaving their milking duties. And when I wrote this book, not a plug for the book, but just to let you know that I wanted to find out, well, what does Krishna say about looking after cows? So I compiled a whole bunch of verses. And one of the verses we just read was something like that. It talks about Krishna milking the cows at nighttime. And there are other verses that talk about Krishna milking the cows in the morning. So that's a practical lesson. Cows usually milk twice a day. There's nothing wrong with milking cows twice a day. So there's kind of interesting kind of correlations like that. Another interesting thing about how cows were looked after in the Govardhan pastime, where Lord Brahma stole the cows. And there's a scene where the cowherd men are on the top of a hill with their cows, and at the bottom is older cows. These cows are expanses of Krishna. In the meantime, these cows have had other calves. This was last year. Now, there's older calves down there that are Krishna. They've got their own calves that are somewhere else. In all cases, there's a separation. Their calves are somewhere, last year's calves are somewhere, and the cows are on the hill. And actually, when these cows see the calf that they had given birth to last year, or not given birth to, suddenly became Krishna, that was it. They went thundering down the hill to get to those cows. So the practical lessons is that you separate calves from the mother. You don't let the cows be with the mother all the time. Now, it's important for us to know that because these days there's a lot of kind of sentiments that people throw out. They're influenced by people who are not influenced by the Vedic culture. And they may question that. Why is the calf not getting all the milk? Why are you getting the milk? Well, the Bhagavatam clearly says that milk is for us. We are also the calves of the cow. You know, just a little kind of a side point there to mention. So there's a lot of practical things in the Bhagavatam. The final thing I wanted to say, I'm going to read another section, because it's very important. Its relationship to this point that Prabhupada raises about pseudo-incarnation. Now, pseudo means false. It's kind of imitation. So how can anyone realistically be an incarnation? Realistically. I mean, we all know ourselves. We know our limitations. So anyone know they're not an incarnation of God. And there's a famous story in the Krishna book about, I've got your name, it's right here. Pondraka. So how is it possible that someone in Krishna's time could say that actually, I'm God and Krishna, you're an imposter? How is it possible such a thing could happen? Anyways, here's a very important verse that describes how that happened. Where is it described now? Where's that verse? Which one is it? Yes, here it is. This is the 10th canto, chapter 66, text number 3. Pondraka was emboldened by the flattery of childish men who told him, you are Vasudev, the Supreme Lord and Master of the Universe, who have now descended to the earth. Thus he imagined himself to be the infallible personality of Godhead. So to me, this is the key verse. This is the key verse that we can get a lesson from. Nobody really believes they're God. It's only when the kind of the bala, the children of your of followers, say flowery things that it goes to your head. And this is the difficulty that anyone has who has, because of any layer of responsibility, even in our movement. And that's why to become a spiritual master, it's a really, really difficult service, because everyone's saying all these things to you all the time that may or may not be true. And if you believe them and you're not actually what they say that you are, then it can go to your head and it can distract you from your deep meditation. So imagine people saying, you know, I think you must be God because I can see you can do a little mystic power. You can read my mind. You can do levitation. You can pull a bit of gold from somewhere. You can pull some fruits. If I even heard a story, I was in a lunch one time. And I was with esteemed patrons and senior temple members, and the host was telling a story where he witnessed someone manifest a gold object in the hand. So you can imagine, if you're not very strong-minded, you might think, that's really amazing. And if someone looks into your mind, they start telling you what you're thinking. Oh, you must be God. So that requires, so childish kind of flattery can make people think they're God. Therefore, Prabhupada's pointing out here, if you want to know who is God, you refer to the Shastras and you don't be influenced by these childish thoughts. So they're the points that I got from this verse. If anybody's got any questions or points.
Can you just clarify the story that you mentioned about the cows? Again, so the three types of cows. So the cows that were allowed
to
eat weight, and Krishna became those cows.
Yeah, the pastime is that these, when... Yeah, the question is, can you explain about the three types that Brahma stole the cows? So, more or less, give them what's going on here. So, Lord Brahma stole the cows, and therefore Krishna expanded himself as the cows. So, there are cows somewhere, the real cows, and then Krishna expanded himself to be the same cows with exactly the same features, same characteristics, the same with the cowherd boys. It completely copies. So these, in the meantime, so therefore there's the cows, and they're suckling Krishna, who's the expansion. And you can imagine they're feeling, wow, these are not just my calf, these are special Krishna. This is a super duper calf, because it's Krishna. In the meantime, they have had their own calves, which at some point, these Krishna cows had to be weaned off. which means somehow there's a separation period and then you have to wait for the new calf to be born. So you can imagine there's some trauma there. They're feeling also this vipralamba, this feeling of separation from their own, from that calf. Even though their own calf is coming, they have this, there's a different experience from their own calf than the calf that was Krishna. So when they saw those calves, those older calves, which is more or less, they've already kind of weaned them, they couldn't hold back this, had to get to Krishna again, which were their own calves. That's the kind of story that's from a cowherd perspective. Any other points or comments? Srinivas Prabhu.
This Krishna killed the follower of Kuvera, right?
Yes.
So in Gopal Champa it says that he was rejected by Kuvera. This follower was rejected by Kuvera. Then he went in to disturb Krishna's pastimes. He thought the gopis are mine, and then Krishna killed him like that.
Thank you. Yeah. So once you read the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Krishna book, you can go to the Gopal Champu. But in the meantime, make sure you understand the Krishna book and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srinivas is our local pandit. He's read all Prabhupada's books so many times, so he has the right to read other books too to enhance the different pastimes. Thank you. Anything else? Please.
Thank you. So did we are spirit souls that are created by Krishna, right? And so in the spiritual world, does he also create that? The beings, you know, to accompany him, to enjoy the pastimes, both on earth, both in this realm and in the spiritual planets.
Yeah, we talk about creation in terms of, in one sense, we're not created because we're eternal. We've existed as long as Krishna has. And so everything is, we've lived for trillions and trillions and trillions of years. However, we're currently in the material realm. And as you described, this is a segment. I mean, this photo, this painting here is very symbolic. Not symbolic, it's where you can see this, the reality. The dark right corner is where we're located. We're in the material world. And that means we're kind of encaged within a physical body. And we identify with the physical body. We identify with the family. We identify with the friends. We identify with the country. But we're eternal living beings. And we're trying to remember that we are residents of Vaikuntha, where Krishna is. We're trying to remember that. And once we remember it, then there's no need to have another material body. So we only speak in creation in our terms to help us get some kind of grasp to it. But we are eternal. Krishna's eternal. The spiritual world is eternal. But we're temporarily in illusion.
Yeah, my question was more regarding in the non-material planet, in Golok Vrindavan. So when you say that we are eternal, well, isn't Krishna also the cause of all causes? So does that mean that we are just expansions of him?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true. We're parts. Mamevam sho jiva loke. We're parts of Krishna. We're equal to Krishna in quality but not quantity.
Thank you.
Prajna wants to say something.
In Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the verse says, Aham savarsa prabhavo mata savar pravant vartate iti mata bhavantima sama. Yeah. So he says, I'm the source of all the spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. So Krishna says he's the source of spiritual and material worlds. Everything comes from him. And so if you look at that 10.8 in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, I think it is, you just read that. Prabhupada will elaborate a bit on that. Okay. All right.
Thank you. So we'll end here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.